Good morning, and welcome to the Wednesday, June 16th edition of the Joint Committee on Ways and Means Natural Resources Subcommittee. Today we're having public hearing talks for workshop on House Bill 3602. We have a number of people signed up for testimony, but before we go into the public hearing, Mr. Rocco, do you have anything for the order?
Yes, Mr. Chair, members, the House Bill 3602 came, was referred to Ways and Means on the House Commerce Committee. It came with a 5-4 vote. Basically, the bill directs the State Department of Agriculture to establish and implement a pesticide use reporting system. I passed out to the committee members a staff note summary describing what took place in the House Commerce Committee, as well as official impact statements on the AM draft version of the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Rocco. What we'll do is go ahead and have the first set of witnesses come in on the public session, public hearing portion. We'll open the public hearing on House Bill 3602. Mr. Witt.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Terry Witt. I'm the Executive Director of Oregonians for Food and Shelter, located here in Salem. OFS is a broad-based coalition of responsible users of crop protection chemicals in agriculture, forestry, commercial, urban, and industrial professional applicators, and agrochemical dealers, distributors, and manufacturers. House Bill 3602A for you today was not considered lightly by OFS. It directly impacts nearly every one of our members, either as a user who must report or a product registrant who must pay the fees. After much discussion, the OFS Board of Directors, and you can see them listed on the side of the stationery, voted nearly unanimously to support the amended bill before you today. I am here today to ask for your support. It is highly likely that you have heard or will hear comments from those who do not support the bill or whose expectations were not fully met. To be very honest, if any of the diverse parties that were took part in the negotiations of this bill had their way entirely, the bill would look much differently, different from each faction that was involved. House Bill 3602A is a compromise. It contains the essential elements needed to develop and implement a scientifically valid pesticide use reporting program in Oregon. It will provide reliable data to agencies and the public regarding pesticide use by all categories, including households. The data collected will help monitor and ensure that pesticide use in Oregon is not having an unanticipated or unreasonable adverse impact on human health, wildlife, or the environment, and it will also assist our agencies and policymakers in making sound decisions. The difference, I might point out, between a right-to-know bill and a pesticide reporting bill is that a reporting bill also protects the rights of those who use the pesticides, the businesses, the applicators, the landowners, and the customers of commercial applications. HB 3602 is not a pesticide right to know act. It makes detailed information needed by health, environmental, and regulatory agencies or bona fide researchers available while protecting the confidential data on use, customers, on users, customers, and businesses from being released to the public. I'll go through the bill briefly to let you know what each section and important language covers. Section 2 deals with definitions, and this is fairly important because it notes that pesticides as used in this reporting bill do not include antimicrobials. There was much discussion as to whether or not antimicrobials, which are basically disinfectants and cleaners which kill bacteria, things like Lysol and tub and tile cleaner, these kind of compounds. The reason they were not included was it would have expanded the scope of this initial program significantly, raising the cost and making, I think, startup very, very difficult. I think there was consensus that at some point in time there may be a need or a desire to include antimicrobials into this reporting program because they are toxic materials that are used in significant volumes, particularly in the urban area. But for right now, they have been excluded. Pesticide users define who will have to report, and the easiest way to look at this is that basically anyone that uses a pesticide other than a person applying for a non-business purpose or to a location not intended for public access. So it is pretty inclusive. We had to establish a new definition called retail pesticide dealer because there are about 10,000 retail establishments in the state which sell pesticides, which do include things all the way down to flea collars and mosquito repellents, these type of products which are registered pesticides, and differentiate these folks, which also include the bigger stores like the Fred Meyers who have garden departments or the Costco's that may sell pesticides in volume, but do not sell what's known as a restricted use pesticide. Those sales are limited to licensed dealers, licensed through the Department of Agriculture, and there are about 300 of those in the state. So this gives us a way of differentiating between a dealer who is licensed and a retail pesticide dealer who is unlicensed. Section 3 summarizes the purpose of the bill, and I think it's very clear, to develop a comprehensive, reliable, cost-effective system for collecting and organizing information on all categories of pesticide use in Oregon. Section 4 lays out the requirements of the reporting program. One, that data is to be collected at least annually, and the basic information at a minimum will include a description of location, watershed, county, zip code, or some other location that is ultimately decided by the working group, product name and EPA registration, which very specifically identifies the product so that it also can be determined what the additives may be or what concentrations of any contaminants that are in those products are as well. The quantity of product applied, purpose of the application and the type of site, and the month of application. And there was also a catch-all in there that, or any other data that the work group deemed necessary to meet the objectives of the program. There was also a mandate that a mechanism be provided to audit the program to assure that quality assurance was in place and that the program was accurate and reliable. They were to develop a specific or are to develop a specific means to identify household and urban use of pesticides. Currently, we have no good way, and we believe that perhaps retail sales may be a good indicator, but that needs to be ground truth with some validation data and some research, and that is also provided for in this bill. We also want to make sure that the program is workable, and so before full implementation in the year 2002, there will be a pilot program started by February 1, 2001 in a small scale so that we can find out how the program works and basically debug it. And then statewide implementation in terms of collection of data starting in the year 2002. Section 5 establishes a pesticide stakeholder work group to assist and advise ODA. This group will be appointed by the governor in consultation with the President of the Senate and Speaker of the House. We did a novel thing. We sunset this work group in 2003, which is the month the same month that the first report is due by the Department of Agriculture. So once the program is fully implemented, the need for the work group really goes away. Section 6 simply states that the Department of Agriculture, in carrying out its duties under this bill, shall seek technical expertise from other agencies and entities in the state, not just agencies, but groups like the PARC, Pesticide Analytical Response Center, and other such advisory groups. Section 7, as I mentioned before, states that the ODA will conduct an analytical review to resolve issues that need to be resolved, and the biggest one at this point in time is to find a scientifically accurate and viable way of assessing homeowner pesticide use. That's a very, very essential component of this bill because without that we have a very incomplete picture of where pesticides are being used in the state. Section 8 talks about the annual report which will summarize the information and analyze the information to be reported on an annual basis starting July 1, 2003. This section also establishes a the need for the department to formulate a confidentiality agreement so that needed information can be protected. In essence, the location of an application or the name of an individual, or in the case of a commercial application, the name and address of a customer. There also is a mechanism by which local, state, and federal agencies, as well as researchers from a bona fide research organization or university, can be privileged to all of the information provided they sign a confidentiality agreement. Section 9, and this is one that I know the open folks seriously oppose, is that it gives the Department of Agriculture the ability to impose a civil penalty of up to $10,000 for breach of confidentiality. And I may just add a little note here that this penalty is consistent with other statutes in terms of this kind of violation. It is correct that this is higher than what a user would have to pay if they were in violation of non-reporting, but I think one has to look at the magnitude of the offense. If indeed confidentiality is breached, particularly intentionally, that is a severe penalty, and one that jeopardizes or can jeopardize the entire program. The department will need to put together a matrix very similar to the matrix they have right now for pesticide violations of the Pesticide Control Act. And that matrix takes into consideration the willfulness, the seriousness of the violation, and I would presume that if there was only one piece of data that was released, that would be looked at much differently than if there was a whole category of information released, or many data pieces released, and what the purpose was. So I would foresee that, you know, an unintentional release of information would receive a very minor penalty rather than a significant $10,000 penalty.
Mr. Chair?
Question.
So, Mr. Witt, don't you think a person in the position of assessing that civil penalty would also be able to look at the lack of severity for the willful non-reporting as a mitigation in terms of the amount of the fine?
Mr. Chair, Senator Corcoran, that's correct. Section 10 is basically language that came from one of the open bills proposed, which clarifies that there is no new private right of action created by this bill. Section 11, again, language from the open organization in one of their bills, provides some protection against frivolous filing of lawsuits. Section 13 through 15, Section 13, subsection 15 on page 9 is one sentence, but it's a very, very important sentence, and this makes it very clear that the Department of Agriculture has the statutory authority to require pesticide use or sales reporting by any person, not just those who are licensed through the Department of Agriculture. They fully believe that their statutes were broad enough that they already had this authority, but we wanted to make sure that there was no misunderstanding that they, in fact, do have the authority and can, if need be, require homeowners, for instance, to report who are non-licensed entities. Section 14, subsection 23, simply makes a reporting violation a prohibited act and therefore subjected to enforcement and civil penalties issued by the Department of Agriculture. Section 15 deals with how the program is to be funded. The initial phase, which includes the research, development of the program, and pilot program implementation, currently will be funded by a $10 increase in the pesticide registration fee paid by registrants. This will be increased for the years 2000-2001. That's collected on a calendar basis rather than a fiscal year. That will raise around $180,000. There are about 9,200 pesticide product registrations in the state. For the years 2002 through 2009, the fees will be increased to $40 per product or per formulation. And it is stated in the bill that that is provided an equal amount of general funds is provided. The combination of these two funds will then provide a base of approximately $1.5 million per biennium.
Sure. Question, sir. I'm just confused here. What are these other fees? Registration fees shall not exceed 130 for each specified formula formulation, and that goes to 160. I'm just confused about what that is.
Mr. Chair, Senator McCurdy, the pesticide registration fee is the basic revenue source for the entire pesticide program within the Department of Agriculture.
And that's the fee that the retail outlet will pay.
No, the pesticide registration fee is a fee paid by the manufacturer or formulator of the product.
Okay.
When they desire to sell a product into the state of Oregon, they must register it with the state.
Okay.
And when they register on an annual basis, they have to pay this fee. And so the number that you see, 130 and 160, are the maximums that the Department of Agriculture can charge a registrant, up to that limit. Currently, they have a sliding scale, which I think for the first 10 products is $95. If you have a number of products from 11 to 40, I believe it's $85, and 40 and above is $75 for registration. So they do have some room there, and I believe they are going to be increasing those fees to cover some of their educational programs.
And those are now existing fees, and you're just raising those and they take that portion out for
it. That is correct.
Thank you.
Section 19 through 22 basically establishes the various deadlines and dates for implementation of the program. It does, in fact, have a sunset on the entire program, December 31st, 2009. This gives the department 7 years of data to basically fine-tune the system and demonstrate the value or what needs to be changed in the program. This is just, I think, to give some finality to the program and ensure that if it is indeed working, that we have an opportunity to review it. If it's not working, we have an opportunity to fix it. In closing, members of the committee, ORCAS believes that the passage of House Bill 3602A is the right thing to do, but it was not without considerable apprehension that we took this step, and we think it is a fairly bold step. The pesticide user communities are not afraid of legitimate use of valid data. It is the misuse of data that will occur that is feared. Therefore, we must design a system that has safeguards to prevent that from happening. The program also needs to be designed to be proactive, not punitive. This measure provides significant flexibility to do just that and still develop a system that will meet the objectives outlined in the purpose section. The system must be flexible to accommodate outcomes of research on things that we do not know at the present time, such as how to cost-effectively measure urban homeowner use. I am confident that the Department of Ag can implement this bill fairly and efficiently and provide the best pesticide data to the state, watersheds, and research community that they need. As stated previously, it is not a right-to-know bill, and it will not satisfy the data requests of a handful of people who want highly detailed data released to the public for special interest purpose. Based on past experience, we have to believe that no amount of data will completely satisfy the desires of a few extremists. This is a big step or a leap of faith for many of us to take, particularly for the farmer, who feels that this will in some way threaten his or her ability to responsibly and legally use pesticide tools that they need to make a profitable living on their farm. This is a good bill. It's an honest attempt to start a program and allow it to mature and be modified so that it's a workable program. We urge your full support and passage of House Bill 3602A. Be glad to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Witt. Question? Senator Clark.
Yes, Mr. Chair, yeah, I want to compliment OSS for working with the work group and coming up with the product that looked came early on in the session, so I really think they came forward and I want to commend them for doing that. I'm concerned, too, that we don't have the urban use pinned down because I really think that that's the one that we're going to find out in coming years is going to be the real problem, a major part of the problem that we haven't been able to examine. There are a couple of questions I have. The antimicrobials that aren't included, are antimicrobials used as pesticides commercially?
Mr. Chair, Senator Corcoran, yes, they can be.
Okay. the other questions, really, my concern all along with this has been that farm workers, for instance, have no ability to find out what the owner is spraying on a field that they're working in. And I see here that there is basic information that's laid out, watershed, county, or zip code location, and so forth. And then I see that Section 8 directs ODA to establish a policy for public release of corporate pesticide use information, but to protect that the confidentiality of that information. I'm just trying to figure out, sort of on the ground, if there is a request for information by farm workers who are working on a particular farm about the particular application at that time. That is one when we visited the farm worker housing. That was a point that they raised that I thought was reasonable. I mean, if you're working in the snow, you should at least be able to know what's out there. Is there a way for that information to be had and still protect the confidentiality of the farmer?
Mr. Chair, Senator Corcoran, there already are several mechanisms in place that should give all farm workers availability to that information. It is law. If they are not provided that information, they are in violation of both state and federal law. We have the Farm Worker Protection Standards in place, which require a farm owner to post in a central location in a language that the workers can understand all materials that have been applied in the field. And the fields must be posted if they're not past the reentry interval. So that information should be posted in a central location, Senator Corcoran, and readily available to all farm workers that enter that site for work.
We were told by one of the farm worker representatives that the problem with that posting requirement is that one of the practices is to post and leave the posting up continually. So they may have been spraying one type of pesticide one year and one type the next year, but the posting stay up there. I presume that the farmer is required to identify specifically what the agents are using in that specific season. Is that right?
Senator Corcoran, I believe, and I would have to double check, but I believe that I am correct in saying that the notice must give the date of application and when it is when the reentry interval has passed. So I don't believe it would be appropriate to put a posting up and say, you know, we are going to use chemical X, Y, and Z, or we have used chemical X, Y, and Z, and just leave it up there. The intent of the law is to inform the workers what has been used, and I believe they're required to leave that up for 30 days, what has been used and when it is safe according to the label to re-enter without protective equipment.
Okay. My last question, Mr. Chair, I'm trying to figure this out for myself, but the confidentiality protections built into this, I assume, are based on a business-to-business competitive edge that one might get from not having this information available. Otherwise, there'd be no reason for this real quick confidentiality. Is that a fair analysis?
Mr. Chair, Senator Corcoran, that is partially it, but I think the bigger fear is the use of that data in harassment techniques, secondary boycotts, these type of things. We've seen it happen in other states where use reporting takes place. For instance, if I happen to be a commercial applicator that does structural pest control work for homeowners, spraying for carpenter ants or something of that nature. There have been instances where when people were able to find out what has been used and where, they have contacted the homeowner and say, you know what's being sprayed on your home. It's blah, 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 and it's going to do this to your kids, and they intimidate people. And I don't think that's, you know, we want that. Nor do we want people filing lawsuits against individuals. The farm community and the forestry use of pesticides, I think, have been under general attack for quite some time, and they quite realistically fear that this will be used as a tactic to take their tools away from them. We think that it's an appropriate thing to protect. It doesn't in any way, I think, hamper those who want to use data legitimately. It does make a difference if it's Senator Corcoran and Senator Metzger that's using the material, as long as we can identify where it's being used, sub-basin, or area, municipality, whatever it may be. I think those are the main things.
So it's not business-to-business competitiveness that you're aiming at. It's more the fear that the folks on the other side of the issue from you would use that information to harass particular businesses.
Senator Parker, it's about 50-50, particularly for a commercial applicator. It is very, very important for them to protect their customer list. Okay. That would be very detrimental for a lawn care or a structural pest control business to, in essence, divulge his customer list to the public so that some other organization could come and underbid them in terms of a contract.
But again, that's the customer list. It's not so much the what I was trying to get at is there a farming practice? If there's two cane farms growing the same product, do they have different strategies for herbicide and pesticide use that would give one the advantage over the other?
Senator Parkman, that could be true, yes.
That's not your main concern.
That's not our main concern, okay. But that could be it. Could be a factor.
Okay, thanks.
Mr. Chair? Before we move on, there's a couple of comments that you're about to address for Senator Corcoran. First of all, I really appreciate your comments in support of OFSJP. I know that you come from an ag community, and I think they have made it.
You mean OFS? That was a good joke. Not OFIC.
OFIC
is, I have a wonderful relationship with them, but they don't care about
themselves. That's the last time I'll ever make a positive.
Yeah. Thank you. Can I leave now, Senator Clark? Tim's up here. I can go now.
And also about those postings, I think the posting issue is if there's a penalty for failure to post, I would think the tendency would be to overpost.
So you'd put your postings and your warnings in the field, and you wouldn't want to be caught without those notices up. So I think they'd probably just stay there because people would be fearful. If they remove them, then there might be something actionable. And I think about the citizen lawsuits. I hear an awful lot about that from growers up in the Hood River area and growers throughout my district. And the idea is we're trying to pull people into a process that they normally wouldn't want to go into. And so I think the issue is there some protection for people? And so the relative de-emphasis of the citizen lawsuit issue, or at least trying to make that seem reasonable by creating some safeguards in terms of the disclosure issue, I think is intended to pull people in. But your comments are well made.
Mr. Chair and Senator Corcoran, you know, I think one of the other things that really is important to stress is that some of these concerns may be perceived concerns. I mean, they may not be real threats, but if a user truly believes that it is a potential, a real potential, as the chair pointed out, they will be very reluctant to participate. And we want everyone to participate. We don't want to turn this into a real broken arm kind of process where you have to go out and twist arms to get them to report. I think once we develop credibility in the system and the users understand that it's not being used as a mechanism to coerce them and that it will in fact help them. We can use the information for registration of new products that are coming down the pike and dealing with things like the Food Quality Protection Act. So I think once we build some confidence and some comfort that I think in the long term maybe those things can be relaxed, but I think initially it's very, very critical in order to have the user community feel comfortable that the information they're going to be supplying is protected, at least from to a certain degree.
Well, Mr. Chair, I've talked to Representative Leonard about this because he stated his concerns about the urban applications, and I think that, in looking at the fish issue over the last three cycles, that's become increasingly obvious that we're not paying enough attention to urban uses, and I know that this bill doesn't get at that particularly, which is unfortunate. I think it would be really helpful if OFS could help in that sort of public disclosure process to do some analysis of urban uses of herbicides and pesticides, because I think it will tend to take the heat off the agricultural community, and I think that there is misplaced heat on the agricultural community. I mean, I really do believe that the stewardship principles of agriculture are such that they are extremely careful in what they do, and I think that the opposite is true of urban users that want a greener lawn. And, you know, we really need to get at the at that fundamental issue, and it would be helpful if instead of, you know, there's always this warfare between the enviros and the farm community that groups like OFF that advocate up for the farm community would help by helping gather the data on the urban use side of it to make the battle lines more clear.
I think Johnson had his hand up first, and then we'll go to Senator Metzger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm not sure how relevant my questions are here, Mr. Ritt, but the one issue that comes up considering the district that I come from in Northeast Oregon, where we have right across the Columbia River a larger marketing area than most of the area in my, I think, the issue of, therefore, interstate commerce and whether or not anything in this bill is going to adversely affect the retailers in Oregon with the competition that might come from the retailers across the river in Washington.
Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, I don't see anything that would be a major disadvantage to Oregon retailers. At this point in time, the only mechanism that would be required under this bill would be retail reporting, if in fact that turns out to be a good surrogate for determining homeowner use. And that would not be, I think, an onerous requirement. All they would have to do would be report annual sales volumes, I believe, would be probably appropriate. And most retail establishments right now are computer controlled, so they have those inventories and can strip that information out fairly rapidly. What's one thing that would be difficult, or not difficult, but I think will be something that has to be done by the work group, is to sit down with the list of 9,200 registered pesticide formulations and actually put together a list of what products are reportable and what products are not, because it's not our intent to get people to report how many cases of off mosquito repellents or citronella candles or flea collars are being sold. Those, I think, are fairly innocuous in terms of having impact on the environment or human health. But we are interested in the over-the-counter herbicides and insecticides that are legal for homeowners to use. So,
thank you, as long as we don't stop beating them out of their sales tax in Washington. I'm not going to be able to consider it.
We don't have to pay the sales tax.
That's not my exactly. Senator Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One asking question is about cost, but I want to follow up on what Senator Corcoran said first. It is interesting. I too am very concerned about the urban use of the pesticides, and I think Senator Corcoran is right on. We have a tendency sometimes to pinpoint a certain industry, saying this is where the big responsibility is. And I remember very well, Mr. Chair, early in the 70s, when there was a move, a real fear of shutting down industry in the metro area because of air quality. And instead, the legislators just directed some dollars to study air quality, and gee, lo and behold, we found out it was our cars. And it wasn't industry at all, and it changed the whole debate of what needed to be done. I think that is important to try to look at things that pesticides, fertilizers, we're using our lawns in Westmoreland on Crystal Creek as opposed to people in agriculture. But I do want to compliment OFS2 for working on this and taking this thing head on and looking at it. I had a question, though, and maybe, Terry, you could provide some input on this. We received a letter from the governor yesterday on this issue, and he, too, was very complimentary on this and supportive. But he did have one question on it, and it says, I want to be clear, in order for the bill to be effective, full funding, which is $291,000, is the figure that was mentioned here, will be required from the legislature. But he also says, I am open to working with you to see that this happens. Now, right now, with the for this biennium, the fee collected, the $10 fee, puts us about $110,000 short of that particular figure. So I guess I have a two-part question. Number one is, if the fee were increased $5.50 a year, we would reach that. and provide from some of the people that I know who are concerned about this issue the confidence, you know, that we're going to fully implement the program. That's one possibility. The other possibility would be some general fund dollars, and my understanding is, the co-chair here is conveniently left at this moment, yeah, says those dollars aren't there. So I guess my question would be, what, number one, is there a willingness to increase that $5.50 to meet this funding so the confidence level is there that we are having a program and this is what we're going to work on? Number one, and number two, your confidence level, if we don't have those dollars, or suggestions of where we might do to make sure that everyone is confident that the program will be implemented fully.
Senator Nestor, can I ask a consideration? Because I think all of us have those questions, and we're going to pull up Lorna Young and some folks from the agencies to address how they got to the number that occurs in the legislative fiscal report on $180,000. And then there's a letter from the governor that has some other implications I'd like to discuss. But what I'd like to do is see if the panel has any more questions for Mr. Witt, and then bring the agency folks up, and we can talk about where the dollars are going to come from.
Okay.
Other questions for
us? I do think it's fair for the witness to respond. I had a question. It wasn't the same, but it was on that line.
The my understanding is that the fee is part of the negotiated process in the bill. Is that correct, sir?
Mr. Chair, we would be open to discussing the possibility of increasing that fee. I would have to obviously go back and talk to the registrants. But that is a possibility. We've had some negative feedback from a number of folks, a number of legislators regarding raising the fee anymore, and I would hate to jeopardize the bill. You know, I could see where we might appease some folks on one side by raising it to $15, but if we create some animosity within other legislators that say if you increase it we're not going to vote for it, I would hate to jeopardize the bill from that perspective. But definitely we are open to discussing it and seeing if we can work out a compromise. Our intent is to have legislation in place. I'd like to make one other comment, because a lot of the discussion has focused on the urban use of pesticides. I just want to make it clear that this bill does currently, even if we do not develop a mechanism for the homeowners, does report a significant amount of urban pesticide use. For instance, it does require any utility or rights-of-way applications that are done by government or local entities to be reported. It does require that commercial applicators who do lawn care and home treatments report. And so these type of applications, the only escape that we have right now is that narrow segment of people who buy products and use them themselves at their home. And that's the difficult one to get at.
Further questions? Before we leave Senator Metzger's comment, let the record show that Senator Metzger does remember the 70s.
Thank you very much.
Professor King.
Thank you. As we see in the sponsors of the bill, they're all Democrats, and then as we see the committee vote, we see that, you know, that was a party line vote that came out of the committee. This bill came forward with negotiations, but not necessarily an agreement on the same version, but I think it was, it's really fair to say that OFS, came forward a long way to, on this bill, and I agree with what Senator Nestor and Corcoran have said, that the resource people for a long time, and we're getting all the regulations, and those people in the city just get to put whatever they want on, and maybe that's a bigger part of the problem, and I think that that is going to be a part of the problem, and not only concern from urban legislators, but from rural people as well. I think there's still time the Republican can become a sponsor of the bill if they really like to. In follow-up to the team, and I will be asking this question of Open and then the agency also to try and get a handle on, because it seems to me that the $180,000 does both administer the program and there's up to the operations side of the
what was meant as a commitment in terms of doing this drill. And I would be real concerned if we came up to legislative intent, but we didn't fund the functioning of it. That would be real important. But when we address the issue, I am wondering if there's more experience in terms of the startup of the process. As I understand it, you know, in speaking with the agency, that I think they do feel comfortable that in 180,000 they can operate, you know, the system, but that there is a concern that, you know, since they haven't been there before, that, you know, they might miss targets. They need to do some research, and we really do have public purpose in this. So, you know, I'm wondering, you know, how we address, you know, some startup, you know, costs in that. So it may be that the fee structure is different in the first couple of years versus the following. That's interesting.
Good comments, Mr. Franklin, and I think the willingness to look at an openness to the process has been expressed not only by Mr. Witt, but also in the governor's letter to the committee.
But just to, you know, as we close this, I'll have an observation. Mr. Witt, did you want to make a comment?
I just want to make one comment, and that is that the one thing that I didn't realize until I took a closer look at the timelines is that the program itself will not start until 6 months into the following biennium. So really what we are in is truly the development and pilot program phase for the next fiscal biennia. So this funding will carry them through July of 2001, and the program does not really start until January 2002. So 6 months of that final preparation will actually come in two biennia from now.
Yeah, we really are talking about a significant ramping up of expenditures in general fund commitment in the second biennium. I represent Westland and then I represent Metro.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I too appreciate Mr. Ditch and OFS's perspective and willingness to work on the fee structure of this bill. I think that indicates the importance of this bill, not only to the natural resource producing community, but also the environmental community, and I applaud your open-mindedness. But I would just have to say that I would have grave concerns over any fee increases above and beyond this point where we are right now. This is quite a step that the agricultural community is making, as I know you know. And before we go one dime higher, I would like to see this implemented and working and perhaps readjust it if there's a necessity. But at this stage of the game, I would probably end up being a no if we raise this any higher. And if we keep it where it is, I would be proud to put my name on this bill, Representative King. Thank you.
Representative Mitchell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, I apologize. I had to testify at a previous hearing, so I might have missed some of the discussion. But I do support this bill. I think it's moving in the right direction. It's important that we have a better understanding of where we're at and what's going on. But I would like to ask Mr. Witt, is there an identified risk or problem at this point that we're trying to alleviate, or are we simply trying to build a database to understand what the situation is better?
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chair, Representative Messerly, no, there has not been any identified significant risk from pesticide use. We have had a number of detections. I think you're all aware that the U.S. Geological Survey folks have been doing testing, particularly on the Willamette main stem and tributaries to that. They did detect a significant number of pesticides, albeit at very low levels. I think what we're really trying to do right now is twofold. One, put together a good database that will help us monitor to ensure that we do not have problems and that the labeled recommendations, in fact, are adequate to protect man and the environment. But I think more importantly, as we move forward with some of our dealings with provisions in the Clean Water Act and Safe Drinking Water Act, we will need to be monitoring for all of these toxins. And so I think we'll be getting ahead of the game by establishing a system that allows us to collect this data. Furthermore, I think it will be of advantage to the local water providers who right now are required to test for priority pollutants. If they can demonstrate to the EPA that a particular pesticide is not used within their recharge area, they do not have to test for that pollutant. And so it does have some immediate significance to community water providers.
Mr. Witt, I think that concludes the questions from the panel. Chair apologizes for misstating your affiliation.
That's perfectly fine. Senator, we like OFIC too.
Thank you very much. I'd like to call Lorna Youngs and others from the Oregon Department of Agriculture if they want to come forward. Yes, Mr. Chair.
Good morning. Welcome.
When you're ready, man.
For the record, my name is Ken Gailey with Governor's Natural Resource Office. I drew the short straw to try to work on this issue that is very important to the governor and is important to the citizens of the state of Oregon. And it came out of some of the issues that were identified earlier. The issue of data on pesticide use became crystal clear when research that Mr. Witt talked about previously in the Willamette Basin on in-stream and sediment loading of pesticides was conducted by the Geologic Survey. There was no way in which they could relate that data of stream presence to current use, historic use, or other uses of pesticides in the basin. And in very recent research in both Seattle area as well as San Francisco, they've been able to identify specifically the relationship between pesticide application in lawns and urban settings and loadings and streams that at levels that are of significant concern, particularly for juvenile fish. And there's been some interesting finding relationships between sales of weed and seed and materials and streams, particularly in the San Francisco area, that should be alarming to many folks. And this bill, which was clearly a compromise effort and does not satisfy either side probably, treats the matter of pesticide use uniformly. I want to be very clear that it specifically states on page 2 of the bill, section 4, sub 5, it requires that the department develop a specific mechanism to identify household and other urban uses of pesticides. This was one of the principles that the governor was very concerned about, was making sure that pesticide use reporting was not just a rural issue, that it cut across all sectors of the state of Oregon, that urban uses were particularly important in ensuring that there was reporting on those elements was critical to the governors. And that is explicitly addressed in the bill and is an explicit requirement of the Department of Agriculture. There are specific issues that separate the parties at the present time, and you will hear those, I'm sure. The bill does defer some of the details to a work group. The failure to resolve some of the finality of what the reporting spatial definition should be has been deferred to the work group. And the governor will be working with the Department of Agriculture and is committed to effective implementation. The charge of the legislation is specific and it is important, and implementing the bill will require staffing. What we're talking about and the difference between the fiscal impact statement that was prepared showing only use of fees to support this program and the fiscal impact that would have a full-time position is $110,000. It seems like that is a relatively minor investment of general fund dollars for to ensure that a program could be effective for all the citizens of the state of Oregon. And matching the industry contribution with general fund, I believe, would show the support of the legislature to make this program work. Because what we're talking about is whether we have a half-time position working on this or a full-time position. I urge your favorable consideration of the bill. Urge you to look into the possibility of any general fund dollars to the tune of $100,000, more or less. I'm glad to answer questions about the letter the governor has submitted to you.
Question. Just as a interesting exercise, could I have a show of hands of the people in the room that have met with a co-chair within the last 24 hours to seek additional general fund commitments to their cancer research sectors? Show of hands, please.
And you just
write one thing.
Come on, get up.
Yeah,
who else? Okay, so two-thirds
of you will note that and the Republicans are easily about not Democrats. Republicans are always asking for more money.
Well, that one, I feel this kind of
right. Well, he's a president. I mean, I'm not going to ask.
So the internet or observers will not have noticed, but for the record, 2/3 of the people in the room raised their hand.
And for the record, 2/3 were Republican.
I can keep it Senator Person.
They all called for the end.
For the question of Mr. Governor,
who granted Mr. Kosher.
Where does the number 291,000 versus 180,000 come from? Where, you know, what's the justification or the basis of the request for the additional 111,000?
It was a full-time equivalent FTE rather than a half-time.
Senator Ferrioli, Representative King, Laura Youngs from the Department of Agriculture can explain that.
Yeah. Welcome.
Laura Youngs, Oregon Department of Agriculture.
Ms. Chair, I can just wait for her testimony on that.
I think
she's
ready to launch. She's locked the voter, right?
I'll just defer my question.
Okay. Actually, my testimony will consist of support for the bill, a pledge to do an even-handed and credible job, and prepared to answer questions about the difference between the two fiscal. At the time in which the bill was developed, we understood that it was unanticipated in the governor's budget. There was no general fund available, and that the industry was willing to support it to the tune of $180,000. The money then would go to a half-time position, and with $100,000 going to fund the research that we felt was necessary to answer a lot of these unanswered questions about what should this program look like. How is the data? How is the data best assembled? What's the best way to get a good handle on the urban use of pesticides? We also recognized that in implementing the bill, we were going to be putting in considerable time of our own additional resources, my time, the administration of the program's time. There'll be a lot of people who will be putting, if you will, pro bono time in making this a good bill. We understood that there might be a possibility for general fund, and so what the addition that we added was to make that support position, the person that we essentially see as staffing the effort that's going to be going on, a full-time position, and then we proposed to add an additional $50,000 to the research cost, because we think it's very important that we have credible research that answers a number of different questions about the nature of what kind of programs are practical, and that's essentially where that came from. Regardless of the kind of money that is given to this project, we are pledged to do credible programs that we know is incredibly important for all individuals, future SPM GIF projects, that there be an even-handed, fair, and open process for establishing what the pesticide reporting project should look like, and that we come up with data that is usable by a wide range of interests in answering questions about the use.
Further questions for Ms. Chang? Ms. Chang, I understand very clearly that the agency is absolutely pledged to making this program work. I appreciate that. Your testimony.
something that people put out a very high priority. Further questions for the panel? Seeing none. May we hear from Stephen Sarian and Laura Weiss? Stephen Sarian and Laura Weiss. It's actually nailed down, so it's a very good microphone.
Okay. Chairman Farrelly, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to testify on House Bill 3602. My name is Laura Weiss.
My name is Nita Hassan. I'm with the Northwest Coalition for Alternatives to Pesticides.
I'm here this morning representing the Oregon Pesticide Education Network, which is a coalition that was founded by the Oregon Environmental Council, the Northwest Coalition for Alternatives to Pesticides, and OSCRS. OPE supports the governor's request for full funding for House Bill 3602. A fully funded program is necessary to create an effective program. If there's been one message I have heard clearly from everyone I have spoken to about this issue, it is that it makes no sense to set up a pesticide tracking system just for the sake of collecting information. It is in everyone's interest to establish a program that works, and works both for those who report information and those who utilize the information. The bill requires the Department of Agriculture to conduct an analytical review and run a pilot program prior to fully implementing a pesticide reporting system. OGA has estimated that they will need $291,000 to effectively do the review and run the pilot. We urge the committee to support any amendments to increase the funding level to the $291,000 needed to pay for program development. Open supports giving OGA flexibility in how to spend the money to develop the program. Currently, the bill unnecessarily ties the agency's hands in how it can spend the money for program development. OGA may find that its relative fiscal needs for the analytical review as compared to other program development activities, such as the pilot program, may be at odds with those proportions mandated in Section 23 of this bill. We urge the committee to give OGA flexibility in how it spends this money appropriated for program development. Thank you for the opportunity to testify this morning.
Questions?
I guess I did want to add that there's been a lot of discussion this morning about urban use of pesticides, and we as a coalition also agree that that is something that needs to be more carefully looked at and studied and understood. I would say that because OGA is charged with developing this mechanism to get a better handle on urban uses, that's something that I would foresee coming out of this initial funding in this next biennium as they develop that mechanism. And again, if the program is not fully funded, I think that they will be hamstrung in developing that mechanism, and we may not get a good handle on what's going on in urban uses as a result of that.
Questions for the panel?
I think in fairness, I understand the issue of the full funding and the need and the desire to see a credible program delivered. And I think the testimony from the agency, although I think every agency would appreciate more resources, and every agency head that we've had in this subcommittee has asked for more, that the commitment from the governor's office and the commitment from the agency is that this bill and this initiative will have full support of the agency and produce a credible, fair, balanced product. And we just heard testimony to that effect. I appreciate the desire to see more resources available for this project. And I think we've been hearing that message fairly consistently from every agency and every resource sector that we've had in this committee.
Did you say initiative, Mr. Chair?
I did say.
Oh, is that like showing initiative?
Yeah, it's also like hopefully this discussion will lead to an honest, fair presentation in a project that will give people the
tools that they need to make these decisions so we don't have government by initiative, which has turned out to be a mixed blessing at points in time. As we can see in Measure 5, Measure 50, Measure 11, some of the other stuff that we all spend our energies on in the election cycle. Questions, further questions this morning? Ma'am, comment?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Neva Hassman. I'd just like to respond to that. We have a number of concerns with this bill. We represent the coalition that raised this issue in this legislature, and you know, it's very interesting to us that the industry is now advocating comprehensive use reporting, and that's a good thing. However, we have a number of concerns with this bill, and our concerns have not been fully addressed, and one of those is the funding issue. And our understanding from the governor's office is that he will not sign a bill that is not fully funded because it will not be able to be effective. And so for those who want to see a bill out of this legislature, I would strongly encourage you to fully fund this program. It sends the wrong message to the people of Oregon and to our coalition to not fund the program to its full level and expect people to believe that a good program is being put in place when it may in fact not be, simply because of funds and vague language that's in the bill.
Appreciate your comments. I guess the working relationship that I've experienced with the agency leads me to believe that it will be a program that's honestly and fairly administered, and that it will produce exactly the type of information that the bill describes. The question of full funding is an interesting one. I read the governor's letter very carefully, and the governor's letter does not say anything about not signing this bill. What it says is that he's open to working with you, meaning the committee of this subcommittee of the Ways and Means Committee. It also indicates that full commitment from the governor's office and the Department of Agriculture to implement this project in a fair and expeditious manner. The Department of Agriculture's budget is still one before this committee, and there may be efficiencies that we can find as a committee there that will produce additional resources. There may be discussion of this issue in relative to the negotiations that are happening soon, if not starting up Thursday, Mr. Co-Chair, on this whole budgetary issue
today.
Red letter today. So I assume that there are at least three different mechanisms, one we've heard discussed today in testimony, for achieving more resources here. However, it is not the chairman's desire to see a revisitation of this issue with the folks that have brought forward this compromise. The OFS board's I think taking an extraordinary step forward, and I think we ought to recognize that there may not have been a bill if it hadn't been for the conciliatory efforts between the proponents and OFS. I think that's absolutely excellent. And I think the issue that the governor raised to make it better is one that stays on the table even if this committee moves our bill to full ways and means. Basically, it puts the onus on in another arena, but there are at least three different mechanisms that I can identify for solving the issue. So, though we may not do that here today, it may be solved at some future venue.
Mr. Chair, am I to interpret that as that you will work to solve this issue?
I will meet the governor's commitment, and that is that we will open to work. We are open to working with the administration to make sure that this happens. And I think those things are very clearly articulated. We're open to making sure this is done. Do you have some testimony to discuss?
No. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Any other questions for the panel?
Mr. Chair, I'd like to make a comment in regards to this. I compliment coming forward to doing what they are doing, and it's basically fee-driven. If we look at natural resource agencies, and I've been around here for 16 years, we have created a process where, in most cases, where the general fund has been taken out, put in, and I don't agree with that. I can tell you that right now. I think that we possibly need to be doing things, because many areas of natural resources
we are filling. I'd like to see a system prove that it works before we throw money at it. And I would not envision any money being put into this program down the road until it is a proven and tested program, which should be, as far as I'm concerned, funded by each. So that's my feeling. I don't know how the other coach here, but I don't want anybody to get any expectation. And natural resources, we're going to come up with a lot of money. I don't see it happening. Natural resource. They, you got the $88 million through Palomation 66 and the general fund that we will be funding. We have in the past is still left, and they're offering packages and fee driven packages that are not happening. When those fee driven packages don't happen, we've got a problem filling the budget.
I think there's another concern. The other concern is that we've got an awful lot of focus on the unanswered questions of K through 12, so any general fund allocation is a direct issue there. We've seen the governor veto every bill that we sent in that had any general fund allocations at all that weren't anticipated in his budget. So there's that problem. The other issue is that we don't know where the negotiations may take us, but they're going to start today, and I think that's an important step forward for all of us. So I guess the point is, my intention is to maintain this is a viable bill. We move it forward, we keep it on the table, and we remain willing to work with folks to make sure that the concerns that the administration's expressed and the folks that have been working diligently to put forward an information program get addressed. We also need to make sure that the concerns that were brought forward by the proponents of this bill with fee revenue also get proper consideration. I don't want to lose votes because we demanded that we have a revisitation of the fee question, and I don't want to preclude a compromise that maybe work out in a subsequent step from this process. So your concerns are duly noted. The committee chair is committed to being open to solutions to the issues. We have the commitment of the agency. You know, I think that's about the best we can get at this point. Mr. Witt has a comment, and I'd like to dismiss the panel, bring Mr. Witt up, and we've got other witnesses, and
the time is growing short.
He could get one comment.
Comment?
Yeah. Mr. Chair, may I direct a question to Senator Kent?
Of course. Sure.
I think in response to what you were saying, you said that you don't see, as I understood what you said, that until a program can demonstrate that it works, then we shouldn't be giving it more money. However, isn't it also logical that a program cannot be fully developed and implemented in a way that people who vote for it envision without it being funded in this initial development phase? What we're talking about here is not long-term funding, but funding in this particular biennium to develop a program that will effectively gather information on all categories of pesticide use, including homeowners, that will run a viable pilot project. So therefore, the program has to actually be up and running prior to the 2002 start date that Mr. Witt alluded to, because in order for the pilot to run, you basically have to have the whole system set up and then try it out. And we fully support a pilot program being run, but it's not something that's going to be put off until 2002. It's going to have to happen between now and the next session. So my point is, my question to you is, would you support funding, underfunding a program and then holding it to a standard that it must, you know, work as envisioned if you fund it, if it's been underfunded initially?
Well, Mr. First, I think it's pretty tough to tell whether it's underfunded or not if you actually do it. And this is a all-encompassing new area to feed on some pesticides. And I think that you move slowly. It's any place that I see, and I'm proud I'm getting out of this process, and I'm proud I've been here, because you've seen more accountability in government all the time. And I've seen new programs start in this process that were underfunded and ended up being overfunded. You never know how this program will change, because you have advocates on both sides of the aisle, people with different philosophies in the total process. So you have to be very careful how you start a new program. Whether it has to do with children,
pesticides as a total process, as far as I'm concerned.
You have to have accountability.
And
so you move slowly.
The chair's not really willing to have a dialogue here.
Okay,
we've got other
minds.
Please, we have other folks that want to testify. I'll point out that Crystal talks about commitment of eventually about $1.5 million to this project. So, you know, this is a serious issue and a serious program that we're developing here. And I have every confidence that the Department of Agriculture will put forward a program that we'll be able to rely on.
But, you know, I'm going to support this move to full ways and means with the commitment to get them the additional revenue. But I think Catherine raised a very good point. Representative Westland says, I'm not going to look at a fee increase until I see this program work. Senator Kemp says, I'm not going to look at a general fund obligation until I see the program work. Meanwhile, there's no money for the program. So I think it's a valid point that she raises, and I think there's a commitment. I'm going to vote for the bill simply because I'm hoping that there's a commitment on the part of the executive branch as well as the legislative leadership to get this thing funded appropriately. I think OFS has a big reason to see that this thing gets funded appropriately, or else they're looking at an initiative. So, you know, it looks like the stars are lined up right on this one.
I would agree. You know, I think the point is that the industry stepping forward with a fee, the program will still have to meet the minimum standards for the Department of Agriculture to roll it out as an effective program. I have great confidence that they'll do just that. I know the governor's behind the program. It will have the support of the legislature. Senator Nestor?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Like Senator Corker, I'm going to support the bill. We did just visit with the governor's office on it, and as OFS, they're committed to making sure it happens. And somehow, you know, not knowing exactly where that 100 grand has come from, but, you know, they're committed to making it happen. And so, and I think that's the bottom line that we're hearing here. We may have had some more discussions of where that's going to come from, but I have absolute confidence that it will be there, and that the commitment on both the executive office and the proponents of the measure will make that happen, so I'm going to be pleased to support it.
Thank you, Senator. If you could bring forward the group, Mike Julius. Mr. Witt, I remember now what I called you for.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I just wanted to offer up perhaps a friendly amendment. I agree with the comment made by Ms. Weiss on the unnecessary restrictions of the spending limits in Section 23. I would be very willing to strike subsection 1 of Section 23 and put that $100,000 into the next, what is now subsection 2, so that it reads, notwithstanding any other law, the amount of $180,000, and then on line 26, insert after for the purposes of, insert the conducting research and developing implementation, so that would in essence give the entire amount to the Department of Agriculture and allow them the latitude to use the resources necessary for research and the other resources then for staffing and implementation.
Second. Hold on, did you say in Section 23?
Section 23, strike subsection 1, and the number 2 in parens, and so Section 23 would simply read, notwithstanding any other law, the amount of $180,000 is established, and then under the, on line 26, when it talks about purposes, for purposes of, and insert, conducting research, comma, and developing and implementation of the Federal Use Plan. That way it would give them full use of that 180 and still dictate that they are to do necessary research.
Were the conceptual changes understood by committee staff and council?
Questions?
Thank you, sir. Thank you. We have yet to hear from Mr. Dewey, Mr. Tess, and Mr. McCulley. We'll call in your office.
I'll bet you these guys have been around long enough to know that they probably have to say hardly anything to have this bill go through, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Kirkland, the same can't be said of committee members.
Any questions for the Mr. Raquel?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, John McCulley, I'm here representing several groups, Agriculture Cooperative Council, Tree Fruit Industry, Farm Credit Services. Mr. Dewey also asked me, since he couldn't be here, to let you know that the Oregon Wheat Growers League supports Senate Bill 3602, as do all of the groups that I just mentioned. You've already heard all of the good things about it, which we endorse. And as you've also heard, and I'll just reiterate, it is much trepidation that I think the agriculture community has come forward supporting this. But at the same time, they realize that something needs to happen in a positive way, and they're willing to help that process along by supporting the bill.
Thank you. Questions? Mr. Martin.
Mr. McCoy, do you have any problems with the conceptual amendment that Mr. Richards offered?
Mr. Chair, Representative Morgan, no. I think that does offer flexibility.
Further questions? Hearing none. Is there any other person here present that wishes to offer testimony?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ray Wilkes from Oregon Forest Industries Council. Very briefly, I'd like to put on the record that the forest industry supports this bill, too. We use pesticides, not to a magnitude maybe that ag and urban does, but it's very important in certain instances to establish new forests where you have vegetative competition. And we applaud the hard work from all the parties that have gone into this and urge to move forward. Thank you.
Questions? Hearing none. Thank you. Any other person? We're going to go ahead and close the public hearing on House Bill 3602. Open a work session on House Bill 3602. There's been a suggestion of a conceptual amendment, and I would like to ask Mr. Rocco to recap the conceptual amendment, and then the chair will entertain motion.
Mr. Chair, as we understand, the conceptual amendment would be to delete on page 17 of the bill lines 18 through 23, change the 80,000 in line 23 to 180,000, and add in line 26 after the second of conducting research and in addition to that, Mr. Chair, it's been suggested by Legislative Council that on page 1 of the bill, line 5, that the sections 2 to 9, that number 9 be changed to 11, and also in line 7, that the 9 be changed to 11, since those terms are used in sections 10 and 11, and that would be a clarifying amendment.
Questions on the conceptual amendment? Hearing none, the chair will entertain a motion.
For 17. Move the conceptual amendment. I pray this way.
Members, you've heard the conceptual amendments. Are there objections to the conceptual amendments? Seeing that's the order, the chair will entertain a motion on the bill.
Senator Nestor. I move House Bill 3602 to full ways and means. We pass recommendation.
The motion is to move the House Bill 3602 as conceptually amended to the full ways and means with the DPAS recommendation. Is there questions on the motion? Representative Jensen.
I have questions on the motion and comments.
Comments.
I intend to we'll support the motion. However, I think we do need to look out for 2001, 2003. Well, we're looking at a $700,000 fiscal as a criterion there, and realizing that $700,000 in a multi-billion-dollar budget may not look like the greatest thing in the world, but as a more famous politician than any of us here said, you know,
Senator Buchanan.
Yes, $2 million here, $1 million there. Pretty soon it runs into money, and so I'm not sure we're going to get another $700,000 in 2001 and 2003, but that will be for that legislature. So,
actually, first instance, your comments are well made until Mr. Witt's conceptual suggestion. I didn't know where we were going to get another 100,000
Just a comment, Mr. Chair, that I would also like to lend my voice to those that are congratulating all the parties that came together to bring this bill into reality. And I recognize that a lot of the compromises that were made by the parties were not comfortable compromises, and that this was come to as an agreement with some degree of difficulty. And I personally would be glad to have my name in support of this bill as it stands currently, but I am not in favor of raising the fees at this time on the agricultural community, and I would be very interested in watching very carefully as the program develops to make sure that it does stay the course. So I'll be voting yes on it, but keeping an eye on it.
I'll be voting yes. I would prefer that we did do the full funding in 2021, or at least the $50,000 research component. I acknowledge that the support for that is not there as of yet. Perhaps it comes on later dialogue. I don't think that this bill's quote is an agreement of negotiating parties, but I think it came much closer than many of us had anticipated, and I hopefully can accomplish the funding of this bill in a way that we have put so much faith and commitment into it that we resolve the issue here in the legislature versus on the ballot box if we can get that
far. Further comment? I think there's a clear implication here, and I hope that we're not overstating it or misstating it. It's that the NCAP proponents are looking at this legislation closely as well, and that this may, in fact, address the issues that might have driven the initiative. And I hope that it does. I hope I haven't misunderstood that. Let's call the roll, Mr. Russell.
Mr. Jensen?
Yeah, aye.
Mr. Messler?
Aye.
Mr. Jensen?
Yes.
President Morgan.
Aye.
Senator Tim.
Aye.
Nicholson.
Aye.
Senator Cookin.
Aye.
Chair Bailey.
Aye. Motion passes. 3602 goes to the full ways and means of the GSAS recommendation. Chair will carry, and on the Senate side, we'll ask the Senator Messer today. On the bill, on the House side, we'll ask Senator King, or Representative King, today. Unless you prefer not to. Okay. The session is closed. The hearing is closed. The hearing is closed.